Well, I just remember.
You and Mary Catherine will have run around together so you can go all at one time.
Well, I think Mama is going to enjoy this.
I don't think we'll be in any hurry to move on, because just think, there are 619 inhabited worlds in Sedania, and frankly, I would like to see every one of them. I really would.
Come to us.
Yes. I have the least desire to hurry.
Bill, which does it say on the first mansion world that we have to raise three children, or is it before we reach the mansion world we have to serve in the nursery? I guess I could look it up.
When you're,
you to answer that.
When you survive, when we survive, our parental qualifications will be adjudged by a couple from your rancho who have raised three children. This doesn't say begotten, it says raised. There's a difference.
Yeah.
And if we are adjudged to be deficient, then normally we would make up that deficiency on Jerusalem, working as babysitters for the Adamites. Well, this is the next place we can get the babies. Or if we had growing children on the nursery world, we could work off half of our deficiency, helping raise our own children.
Well, that's what we just think.
One half of our deficiency.
Yeah, I have one.
Yes.
I didn't want to say that.
Otherwise, we get some experience babysitting some little Adamites. The Seraphim have to do that, too. They have to get their parental experience with the Adamites, because Seraphim cannot get their kind. But this experience is required. I have a feeling that they must work it with a system that is the equivalent of money, at least a system of rewards and punishments, at least until we develop natural enthusiasm for the paradise of science. And I think that isn't until we about get to the fifth mansion world, isn't it?
Well, we get really enthusiastic.
Sure. And prior to that time, I'm sure they must keep count on it, so that if we goof off, we pay for it. And if we excel,
they set us in the corner, in other words.
Yeah.
That's right. Lock them in the
closet. That's right. I'm sure that we require a sub-spiritual stimulus on the early mansion world, because Lord knows we sure need it down here. I would hate to see what any of us would look like if all pressures were removed except the hunger for truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Building, this world is
really
up to prayer. I
feel
there is too much
pressure. Oh, yes, I agree. I recommend to you very highly the last week's issue of Time Magazine and the cover article on anxiety.
Yes.
And when you read that article, pause to consider the function of the Blue Book in relation to what they're talking about. This is an unusually well-written job, even for time.
That's just out.
No, it was out last Tuesday.
The one with that creature on the front.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the name of it?
It's last week's issue of Time. It has a impressionistic painting designed to depict anxiety. Look. Yeah. When civilization is primitive, it's simple. When we attain the age of light and life, civilization again is simple. But the simplicity of light and life is the simplicity of exquisite sophistication. During the intermediate stages, civilization becomes very complex. And we're on the upgrade towards greater complexity. More and more laws, more rules, more regulations, more this, more that. Greater and greater difficulty in communication. We live in a Tower of Babel today, Example. Consider the problem of white sand. You have chemists that understand exactly what should go on in solid fuel in a missile. But these chemists have absolutely no conception of material handling and how to set up a continuous process, mix of these chemicals. The material handler has no knowledge of chemistry, and our schools train no one who can communicate with both. Science today is generating a 20th century Tower of Babel. Men who know their specialties but cannot speak to each other. We have no generalists in industry, only specialists.
Well, the doctor's world is becoming.
Yes. There's a gal friend of mine in New York, a gal in retail merchandising, was worried about cancer some years back. She lost a lot of weight, and I said, Dorothy, one day, I said, how's it going? Well, she grinned. She says, Bill, one specialist can tell me everything from above my navel, and the other one everything below my navel, but he can't find out about my navel.
That's right.
Yeah. So much for your answer. I like it here. Yeah. Well, I don't know any better.
No, I'd be lost on earth. Absolutely lost on the world. It was even approaching my right mind. I ever wouldn't know what to do with myself. For God's sake.
I think from the standpoint of the Supreme Being, this is a very desirable world to grow up in because it's tougher. I think God loves us too much to make it this tough. But if his creatures make it this tough, he doesn't undo what they've done.
Will creatures?
Yes. Lucifer was a will creature. Caligasti was a will creature. Annas and Caiaphas were will creatures. Joshua Ben Joseph was a will creature.
Then you can't say but what we may very well blow ourselves into space. Because that would be will creatures working.
At this point, I think they'll stop us, Wilma. I don't think they'll protect the United States of America or any nation, but they'll protect the human race. Yes. They'll protect human germ plasm.
Well, Bill, after looking at a TV program the other night, trouble out of San Francisco last time of those riots, I just don't see it. We can't put up any kind of a defense against communism or what it's going to overcome.
Overcome us?
Communism is going to overrun the United States.
Oh, no. I don't think it is.
Oh, I'll tell you, we our laws don't protect us. When people can get by with what they did out there because of our laws. You don't think that they're infiltrating us?
Well, the United States? Hmm? No. Not except by force.
What you were discussing, Bill, just a moment ago was what I had referenced to a while ago. I don't think that that part will be destroyed. It could visit the world.
I can see a world in which the sole survivors are the Eskimos and the Patagonians. And they'll multiply and punish the
I wish you'd elaborate on their not taking us except by force. You don't think they are infiltrating the United States? You don't think they're ever
trying to?
Don't you think they're doing it?
Not successfully.
Oh,
it's a matter of opinion. I haven't made a study.
You've been working like hell for the boss, Bill. Have you read anything just kind of down
lately?
I don't think the comments are any more apt to take us than the fascists were. And please, I make no distinction in my thinking between a fascist and a communist. No, I grew
up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I grew up in a corporation that was intensely fascist.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a clear intent to spread their fascism to world domination.
No, I'll tell you what I was subjected to in that corporation. An incessant bombardment that it's going to be either communist or fascist. Now, which way are we going? And me and one Jewish attorney used to comfort each other and say, we ain't going either way.
How was the Battle of El Alamein lost? Why was it lost?
El Alamein?
You ran an oil company at that time, weren't you?
Yes.
Integrated? Well integrated.
Yes.
Why was that battle lost?
El Alamein? Wait a minute.
Why was the whole campaign, Sahara campaign, lost for the Nazis?
They cut their supplies and let it drain.
One basic ingredient?
Oil.
In a man, oil. Yeah. Grease, not really, not gasoline, but grease, oil. Sand versus the axle.
No, I grew up, my corporate environment was during the Spanish Civil War.
Really,
and,
not that old.
Every, sir?
You're not that old.
I was working in this oil company during the Spanish Civil War.
Oh, Spanish, excuse me, I'm with you. Okay.
I know the sentiment that was in that company. I'm carefully not naming the company on this recording. But it was a very strong pro-fascist sentiment. Very strong pro-fascist.
As a matter of fact, I was pro-fascist during the Spanish Civil War. At least I felt that they were right.
I've talked to employees who were marching with the Bunker rallies. Nice red face. Guy by the name of Schultz. Adolf Strudel. I bowled one kid out.
You what?
I bowled one kid out. I raised hell with him. Getting taken in by the moth-eaten imperialism of a 2x4 outworn nationalism when he had citizenship in the country, but I think I used poetic expressions. The thunder of whose armies would shake the earth and whose air fleets would darken the sun. Of course, we hadn't built them yet, but we did.
You therefore think that we, as citizens of our America, suffer dangers from fascism as great as communism.
Oh, yeah. Now, fascism.
Today.
Yeah. Because the nature of the beast is there. Here. If you're a conservative and don't have God, you still worship. You're apt to wind up worshiping power, and you end up worshiping the state. You're a fascist. If you're a liberal and don't have God, you still worship, and you end up worshiping the state, and you're a communist.
Well, God bless your heart.
And I make no distinction in my thinking between a fascist and a communist.
I finally got on your trail.
And as far as I'm concerned, in combat, I'd shoot one as quick as the other.
The veil came back.
Mm-hmm. To me, one fellow started right, and the other fellow started left, and they've gone all the way around the circle till they're sitting on the opposite side of the table from where I'm sitting. And I would kill them, because if they had a chance, they would kill me first.
One as quick as the other.
That's right. And I still believe it's proper to use force in self-defense.
You think you write the book and stand
right there? It says that might does not make right, but might makes what has been and is. And I firmly believe that we will never have peace on earth until we are willing to fight for it at the drop of a hat. All the peace conferences and all the disarmament conferences so far have merely been preludes to new conflict. Yes. When we associate might with right, then we have the dawn of civilization. I believe in the disarmament of national forces anytime within 1,000 years after we have disbanded our internal police forces. When the police have withered away because there's no more crime, then I think we can pretty well consider doing away with the Army and the Navy, the Marine Corps and the Air Force. But as long as we require police, armed police, to maintain internal order, how can we consistently try to live in a world where the unholy may lie in wait for the ideal? Jesus did not say that it was good and proper to use force for personal reasons, but he told a condemned man in the last hour, "You nor I may deny the right of society and the state to defend itself in the manner of its own choosing." Jesus recognized that the collective had powers which the individual should hardly exercise.
As individuals, we were told to turn the other cheek.
Yes, but Jesus also said, "Render unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's."
Well, of course, I don't think that would be considered an inquiry or telling someone.
As a society, not as an individual. Are you talking about capital punishment?
You're talking about
shooting somebody. Let me give you a picture of the of what I think is the evolution of civilization. We've passed some significant landmarks. If you go back into the American West, you start out with lawlessness, tooth and fang, who can draw the fastest and shoot the quickest and straightest. That's all that determines anything. This goes on until pretty soon the lawless are interfering with business and prosperity. And then you have your first collective illegal action on the part of businessmen. Peace-desiring citizens who resort to violence as the prelude to peace. This is the action of a vigilantes committee. Now, the first vigilantes committee in modern times was the international column that marched on Pekin to relieve the legations that were being besieged by the Chinese Boxers in 1895 or thereabouts. This was an international action, not the action of any one nation fighting China. This was collective Western civilization plus Japan saying, "Here, we got some rules and regulations. You don't besiege ambassadors." And they moved in collectively, the United States, England, France, Germany, Russia, Japan, so forth, Italy. That was the first vigilantes column. In the early 1930s, the Kellogg-Briand Pact was signed. And this is the first time in planetary history that the nations of this world have even said that war is bad. This is the first time they've even said it. I don't expect them to live up to it. But until this time, war was in good standing. Perfectly all right to have war. But now at least the nations of Earth once said, "War is bad. We renounce it as a policy." The mere fact that we fought another war doesn't trouble me in the least, Wilma. First we have theoretical justice, and then we fight to get actual justice. The Korean War was the first legal war that was ever fought in the history of mankind. This was a legal war fought by the collective action of the United Nations. This was the first legal war, a lawful war, war fought by the declaration of an international legally constituted body who could act because the Russians happened to be boycotting the Security Council at the time. That's the first legal war. Now, this is progress.
You liken the UN at that time to the vigilante committee.
No, this is a lawful thing. This is the sheriff taking action. Now we got a sheriff in Korea. We've had UN troops in the Gaza Strip. We've got UN troops in the Congo, and it doesn't trouble me too much. They're not too effective. These are international police. We've never had international police before. We're making progress.
The fact that they failed so many times is main to...
How many sheriffs got knocked off? But in the end, the sheriffs won, didn't they? But in Abilene, I'm sure the first sheriff had an awful rough road at home. Now, for what it's worth, I see these to me are important milestones. A vigilante's action, the time of the Boxer Rebellion. Not one nation, but a collective action. Illegal, but collective.
The subjugation of the Boxer Rebellion was illegal?
There was no law. There's no law beyond the law of nations. At that time, now we have international law in the United Nations. But this was no one nation picking on China. This was the most civilized nations of Earth moving in collectively and saying, we'll relieve the legation. You don't do this to our diplomatic representative. Roughly 30 years ago, we said war is bad. We said it. This is the beginning of a new idea, and ideas are potent. In Korea, we fought our first legal war, a war that was fought by the lawful decisions of a lawfully constituted international body. This was a legal war. The UN police are not in Korea as invaders. This is an international police force fumbling with its job. I don't know. This much progress, I see. I take comfort in this.
Well, I would think so, because this is getting back to the subject of the goal again. There's definitely a decision has been made. Has been made, and I think I'm of the opinion myself, for what little it's worth, that the outlaws now respect that opinion, and they're very worried and very concerned about it. And that's why I can't believe that they can go any farther than they have gone already.
We'll see.
We'll wait and see, but of course, to us, it would make no difference when we're talking about light years' time. And worlds, but it does make some difference insofar as our own Christian civilizations.
This is correct. This is correct. Here, when you vote in an election and lose, why don't you take to the hills with your possessions, the firearms, and prepare to defend yourself from those who were politically victorious? Let's analyze why we don't, because some people do in some countries. When they lose an election, they do take to the hills. What is it that leaves us unperturbed in terms of personal safety, our ability to do business, our ability to worship, our ability to move about freely? Why are we unconcerned about being on the losing side? It's because of ideas. These ideas are more tenuous than clouds and stronger than steel. We trust, hence we do not fear. And if we did not trust, we would take to the sticks with our shooting irons, just as I have personally seen in Nicaragua. If you want to read what I think is one of the best treatises on government that was ever written, get a translation of a book written by an Italian historian. It's called The Principles of Power. The author is Guillermo Ferraro.
Slow now.
Guillermo, G-U-I-L-L-E-R-M-O, it's William in Italian.
William. Hang on.
Ferraro. I know his nephew. He's a physician in Canton, Ohio. Bill Ferrar. Principles of Power. He was exiled by Mussolini, and he wrote in Switzerland. And he analyzes what is and is not legitimate government. And he analyzes these ideas which make representative government work. Not constitutions, but these ideas, these trusts which are built up, by virtue of which, yeah, we lost an election, we pair an election, but so we go on. As I cabled my old man, my dad is a Rock Ridge Republican. I'm the last living Whig. So I don't
much care. Now that's on tape.
I don't much care which party wins.
Last
and when Truman upset Dewey in 1948, my father almost died. I was in New York at the time, and I sent him a facetious telegram. I said, as a small comfort, I would quote Norman Thomas. Subquote, regardless of who is elected, the Republic will endure. End all quotes. I find being a Whig very comfortable because our party hasn't made a major political blunder in over 100 years. And that's more than the Republicans or Democrats.
Right.
Did your dad
take
this last election pretty hard?
That's amazing.
Well, yeah. He was. Papa's a Civil War Republican. I mean, he takes a very broad view as long as the Republicans win. I'm kind of glad that we elected a Catholic.
Well, you have to take a pretty broad view when you live in a country where you have to be registered as a Democrat to vote for, to cast your vote for a man in the primary.
I think one of the most amusing things happened is Kennedy fighting the Catholic hierarchy with the Baptist Convention. They had that lined up behind them. That's a
That's good.
You know, Bill, don't you think he's a pretty tough guy?
Kennedy?
Yes.
I decided that Nixon was dead when I looked at the TV show. Kennedy's got a
I think he needs a lot of counsel.
He's got all of our men back, too.
Well, if you've got any children that want to go east, don't send them to Harvard, because the faculty's been stripped bare. I mean, you might try to get a
friend. They say the way to get to Washington is to go to Harvard and turn you right.
Tommy Winrow should be in a pretty good position here, you see. If
he wanted to go to Washington, Harvard.
No, when you come right it down is. To it, the I think the biggest thing that's going to be communism is this blue book.
Is what?
This blue book. Well, the dictators always do get ahead, and the republic, the democracies always are slow because they're inefficient.
Well, that's what makes them endure.
I've always contended that communism has built in seed of its own structure. Namely, its lack of Christianity. Not that Christianity is promoted by the Catholics, that Bill, I think you're like the little boy that whistles when he goes to the neighbors after dark about a mile away. In the creek bottom, and the elms are so thick that you can't see the start.
Looks like you was raised down in my holler, though.
Well,
I hope you get to the next.
I always said, scared on the way.
You folks, frankly, have gotten me into a field in which I'm not too even interested.
Because we force you there at times for...
I don't even try to keep too up to date in this field because, frankly, I do my job and work for the Blue Book, and I haven't got much time to be concerned about much else.
Well, really, who could keep up to date on this thing?
Not too much.
You don't have.
I just don't worry about this country politically or economically. I worry about the Blue Book.
Well, Bill, you are such an astute student of history, and I value your opinion. And I want to ask you one more question, and then I'll promise I'll not.
No.
What is the closest cousin to your communist? Is it not socialist?
No.
What's the closest cousin?
Oh. A socialist without religion could become communist.
Without that attribute that Bill speaks of, they're one and the same.
Now look,
aren't they?
You give a person religion, and you have conservatives and liberals. The conservative calls the liberal a radical. The liberal calls the conservative a Tory. And this is an excellent contention between the conservative Epimethean and the liberal Promethean. And neither one should get on top for very long, because if the liberals get in the saddle, they're going to change things so fast we have chaos. And if the conservatives get in the saddle, they're going to stabilize things so completely that we'll have stagnation. And we don't want either chaos or stagnation. So a good liberal and a good conservative are the best things for progress. Because when you're going uphill, you want to accelerate. When you're going downhill, you want to use the brakes. The liberal is the accelerator, the conservative is the brake. And I'm not interested in any automobile that doesn't have both of them. Now, when you take religion away from the liberal and from the conservative, then you're apt to wind up with the communist or the fascist. And I don't want any part of either of them. I happen to be something of a liberal, but I have a great respect for a conservative. A great respect.
What happens to the automobile?
Because he's just as much of an idealist as I am. He has his ideals, I have my ideals. And neither one of us should win very long. It's not good for progress. I want to go too fast, and he wants to go too slow. And we should engage in a perpetual tug of war with breathing spells. Now we surge forward, then we need conservatives to consolidate the gains. The liberals aren't going to consolidate. They're going to try to gain some more. We need time to digest. In these papers, you find this attitude is portrayed in our planetary government by the angels of progress and by the religious guardians. The religious guardians are conservatives. The angels of progress are liberals. Not personally, but these high seraphim of paradise attainment have been commissioned officially to espouse these positions in the planetary government. This is their official attitude, and I'm sure they are excellent protagonists, not antagonists. I think they give each other a hard time now and then, including injunctions, suits, and whatnot. Catholic? Oh yes, I'm very glad. High time we got rid of that taboo. High time we got rid of that taboo. I'd like to see us put in a couple of Protestants, then try a Jew. Then put in a couple more Protestants, and then let's elect a light-colored Negro.
Now you've got the Jew coming in a little late.
No, we've got to get a woman in there first.
You've got...
Now, honey, there I'm prejudiced.
Well, when do you think it's time on this mortal planet for a few breaks?
I don't know.
Not B-R-E-A-K-S.
This is one right here. I think the Blue Book is a big break.
Yeah.
tremendous freedom. Bill, a while ago, you said...
I didn't know, not B-R-E-A-K. I'm talking about B-R-A-K-E.
Oh, I think Eisenhower was a break. Not a bad one.
Well, he... The bands wore out.
Yeah.
And we're slipping a little. And now we're in a brand new world. I mean, and hell is moving fast. So when is Barry going to come up with a break?
Who?
You're going to have to slip a Jew in there quicker than these two Protestants.
Barry, don't worry. I don't know.
I don't worry with those things. Bill, that I guess.
I gather a while ago you feel that this conservatives and liberals and the guardian angel, the seraphim?
Yes. They're officially conservative and officially liberal.
Well, now,
I don't know what their personal views are.
That was the difference in holding up the fourth portion of the book with the conservatives and that.
Now, this is how legends get built up.
You're going to turn the tape off?
I speak only for myself. It's an odd thing to encounter something like this blue book. Fairly early in life, I encountered it when I was in my teens. And I've lived with it ever since. And I've thought about how to spend one short human life. And I've tried to organize my life simply. The first thing I try to do is take reasonable care of my health. I've been a little spotty on that in the past. Maybe if they pound on me hard enough, I'll do better. Then do a job. Do my duty. That means earn a living. All that attaches there too. I live in a big city, so I have no community ties whatsoever. I just don't do anything to the city of Chicago except tolerate the corruption and cuss about it a little bit, and I do nothing about it. Then I work for this book, and if there's any time left over, I have a little fun. Occasionally there is. Next weekend I'm going to have a lot of fun. And Bourbon Street, New Orleans, and the French Quarter. I'll do a lot of hiking all over the place. Ma'am? Well, we don't meet every
month. Every month
you don't meet? Yeah, we meet every month.
Well, tomorrow is the first Monday after the first
Thursday. Well, we discontinued that.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll erase that note out of my book.
Yeah. And, I think this way you can get something done in life. Now, if I didn't have this book, I'd probably do something in the way of better government. Or I'd try to, in some way, make a contribution to my day and age besides just earning a living. But this thing takes up all my time. And if I have any more time, I'd rather spend it here effectively. I know a little something about the book, and I don't know beans about politics, except I know I don't know much. And it's too old for me to learn enough to amount to anything or to do anything in the time that's left. And I see people who put their life in little dabs all over, and I can't seem to get much done. But I think if you concentrate, then you can maybe add it up, you know? And spend your life effectively.
Well, Bill, in that you don't know how far-reaching perhaps your influence might be in the city of corruption where you have no neighbors. You don't know.
I know that
it might be a very far-reaching thing.
I question it because I just don't do anything except live there.
Well, I know, but in your thinking, your meeting, and your discussions, and your enlightenment, that alone.
I can only tell what I'm conscious of trying to do. To me, health, duty, the blue book, trifles. That seems to make sense.
Well, I can't think of a more full life than that.
I haven't got much time. I'm not bored. I'm breathless sometimes, but I'm not bored.
Very full life.
do this, that, and the other thing. I just say, no, I haven't got time. I won't make any exceptions. Then I have time to do this and still do a job. Well, we lived through Easter. Billy Grissel, you asked me the dirtiest, meanest question that anybody's ever asked me in a long time. That's a hard thing to talk about.
Well, I learned a lot.
Well, it's my evaluation of the trial and crucifixion.
Well, it's a very glorified and a very practical answer.
I find it hard to read because it's too painful. It was us folks that did this.
I had never thought about it. We have to think about us today, but I see your point quite clearly.
I mean, I feel those moments.
But we're those howling mob.
Yeah, sure we are. We're everyone. We're all the characters.
We're all.
Yep. The onlookers. The lady from Cyrene who carried the cross. The women who wept.
How many worlds did you say that Melchizedek had to do with?
The order of Melchizedek.
What's the order of Melchizedek?
Seven.
Seven.
In the sense that one came and lived as a man among men. I think they're active on all worlds, but not as temporal creatures of flesh and blood. We're told specifically that this has happened only seven times in the whole of the universe. Machiavelli's incarnation being the seventh and most recent.
The other thing I wanted to re-ask you was, you did say that David was the only human being who said goodbye to Jesus.
Yes. David Zebedee.
Yes,
the brother of James and John. He said, Master, I'm going to miss you. I've enjoyed working with you. Jesus said to him, as I recall, well, David, he said, many have done those things which I asked them. These things which you've done unbidden. But you too shall work for me, or we're both going. And you remember he asked David if he had a runner? He asked David if he had a spare runner. David says, sure. So he sent for him. Runner's name was Jacob. Jesus sent him to start the run to Philadelphia to tell Abner what was going to happen. You consider the temporal power which this Jew might have wielded. When he said to Jacob, he said, Jacob, don't worry about going down the bloody way to Jericho. For tonight, an unseen rock goes to your side. Old Jacob was invulnerable that particular evening. That message was going through. Nothing is going to stop me. When he said, even now I could ask my father for 12 legions of angels, this was no idle threat. What a temptation to vindicate oneself, to have power and steadfastly refuse to use it for personal aggrandizement. This is the mark of a high civilization. to quote from the Mirage, the illustration of the Mirage and Motor.
Don't you expect that he's going to run with Latch and Tune?
I don't know.
And don't you think that he wanted that runner to be called out to the Latch and Tune? No.
Possibly.
He's been there in the time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought not you, but it was so that he had him repeat the message.
Mm-hmm.
He knows our failings.
How kind he was to tell him, don't worry.
You want to be sure he didn't step the telephone down to get what the message was. That's what happened to me as a little girl. Mama sent me over to borrow something from one of the neighbors. They were kind of walk. She told me, and I said, now don't you forget. And I was going along just repeating it. She don't fell down. I fell down and got up. I didn't know this why. But I went after it. I had to go back home and find out.
Bill, out of the crucifixion came a very wonderful thought here. He says, makes it nearly impossible for a human being to complain about anything.
That's right.
I think that's a wonderful statement.
That's right.
So I don't think we'll ever have tough duty after this life. I think this life is to the universe career as boot training is to service in the Marine Corps. When I left Parris Island, South Carolina, I've never found difficult duty since.
Were you at Parris Island?
Yes, ma'am.
Whew. Did you ever have to be, were you ever gone out and fought
at night? No, but I'll tell you a funny story. We did a little boxing there. We didn't have any equipment, so we boxed barefoot. And as I later found out, years later, just for kicks, I had x-rayed a broken little toe. The next morning, it was pretty badly swollen, and I couldn't get my shoes on. Couldn't get that shoe on. So I reported to him, and my DI looked at me over and he says, well, kid, obviously you need bigger shoes. So he took me down and got me a bigger set of shoes, and I went right on through boot training. And you know, it didn't occur to either one of us that I was going to turn in sick. I mean, for a broken little toe, you don't you walk on that. Now, big toe might incapacitate.
Well,
you.
I've had a broken toe twice, and I didn't keep going.
Mm-hmm. My boy said that he was fearful of a great many things. So he had to make his first night jump. He was a paratrooper.
Mm-hmm. That would be a thriller.
They took away from him a lot of these things that bothered him.
But sure.
So he's no longer afraid of a lot of things.
I'll tell you honestly, Wilma, I don't hold with standing duty and drinking vodka, neither does the Marine Corps. I mean, this is not according to file. But as far as toughness is concerned, the treatment I received in Parris Island, I've looked back on in retrospect, was one of the kindest ministries that was ever extended to me in this life.
Even though it was tough.
It was the most kind thing in the world because they were teaching me how to stay alive under extremely difficult circumstances. And on one or maybe two occasions, I used everything I'd learned. And since I'd learned it, I didn't have to think about it. I just did it.
Okay.
Right.
Well, you goofed off on your training.
This can't be done.
Nicaragua.
This can't be done. You can't goof off. That's the beautiful part of it. They've got you. They don't let you goof off. You try to goof off and it gets real bad.
You think we can goof off on this?
You can't cheat in this life either. No, I look back on that training in the light of active service later on where they used live ammunition. This was very kind. This is how you do this, you've got a better chance of surviving. And if you're going to go into a situation where you might risk your life, gee, what a wonderful thing to be trained how to become very difficult to kill, you know?
Well, And mostly you were trained in spirit, too, as well as the...
This is true, too. It was the original brainwashing. No, that's physically very tough.
Yes.
But in retrospect, I think extremely kind.
Yes,
very
I think
kind.
You have a good thought there. Very good.
Very kind. Because it's real. It prepares you for what you're apt to go up against. And I think this life prepares us for just about any darn thing that can happen from here on out. At least.
Is this where you came up with the thought, Bill, that there is a limit to physical pain, but in spiritual and intellectual, there's no limit?
That's always been my belief. That's why I believe in prenatal care for fathers. You see, in labor, a woman will pass out if she hurts beyond a certain point. But there's no limit to the anguish a man can endure at that time. And the brutality of the medical profession and their callousness towards fathers is illustrated in St. Louis the other day when they lost a father. This man had gone through all this anguish. They came and told him he had twins. He died of a heart attack. Now, if he'd had proper prenatal care, he'd be alive today. I just don't believe in the way they handle the fathers. We risk our lives in that. Where in the devil is the story about Ag and Donner?
Well, it's the last paragraph on the midwares in paper.
Believe without seeing, persevere when isolated, and triumph over insuperable difficulties, even when alone. This functional grouping of the Agendaters persists throughout the ascension of the local universe and the traversal of the super-universe. It disappears during the sojourn in Havona, but promptly reappears upon the attainment of paradise and definitely persists in the core of the mortal finality. Tepamantia is an Agendanter of Finaliter status, having survived from one of the quarantine spheres involved in the first rebellion ever to take place in the universes of time and space. All through the paradise career, reward follows effort as the result of causes. Such rewards set off the individual from the average, provide a differential of creature experience, and contribute to the versatility of ultimate performances in the collective body of the finality. Go back to the stole of Jesus. See if I can find a quote. In entering upon the Rancho Bestola, you have voluntarily divested yourself of all extraplanetary support and special assistance such as might be rendered by any creature of your own creation, as your created sons of Nebadon are wholly dependent upon you for safe conduct throughout their universe careers. So now, must you become wholly and unreservedly dependent upon your paradise father for safe conduct throughout the unrevealed vicissitudes of your ensuing mortal career. And when you shall have finished this bestowal experience, you will know in very truth the full meaning and the rich significance of that faith trust which you so unvaryingly require all your creatures to master as a part of their intimate relationship with you as their local universe creator and father. In other words, he asks nothing which he hasn't proved he can do. Again, of the master more is expected than of the servant. Of the creator son, more is expected than of any other son in the local universe. Emmanuel's charge to Michael. The seventh bestowal commission.
I'm not that one.
Oh.
Beg pardon, American.
I said, is that in the ranch?
In all that you may perform on the world of your bestowal, bear constantly in mind that you are living a life for the instruction and edification of all your universe. You are bestowing this life of mortal incarnation upon your rancho. But you are to live such a life for the spiritual inspiration of every human and superhuman intelligence that has lived, now exists, or may yet live on every inhabited world, which has formed, now forms, or may yet form, a part of the vast galaxy of your administrative domain. Your earth life in the likeness of mortal flesh shall not be so lived as to constitute an example for the mortals of Urantia in the days of your earthly sojourn, nor for any subsequent generation of human beings on Urantia or on any other world. Rather shall your life in the flesh on Urantia be the inspiration for all lives upon all Nebadon worlds throughout all generations in the ages to come. Your great mission to be realized and experienced in the mortal incarnation is embraced in your decision to live a life wholeheartedly motivated to do the will of your Paradise Father, thus to reveal God, your Father, in the flesh, and especially to the creatures of the flesh. At the same time, you will also interpret with new enhancement our Father to the supermortal beings of all Nebadon. Equally with this ministry of new revelation and augmented interpretation of the Paradise Father to the human and the superhuman type of mind, you will also so function as to make a new revelation of man to God. Exhibit in your one short life in the flesh, as it has never before been seen in all Nebadon, the transcendent possibilities attainable by a God-knowing human being during the short career of mortal existence, and make a new and illuminating interpretation of man and the vicissitudes of his planetary life to all the superhuman intelligences of all Nebadon and for all time. You are to go down to Urantia in the likeness of mortal flesh, and living as a man in your day and generation, you will so function as to show your entire local universe the ideal of perfected technique in the supreme engagement of the affairs of your vast creation, the achievement of God, seeking man, and finding him, and the phenomenon of man seeking God and finding him, and doing all of this to mutual satisfaction, and doing it during one short lifetime in the flesh. May your Father and my Father, who has ever sustained us in all past performances, guide and sustain you and be with you from the moment you leave us and achieve the surrender of your consciousness of personality throughout your gradual return to recognition of your divine identity incarnate in human form, and then on through the whole of your bestowal experience on your ranch, until your deliverance from the flesh and your ascension to our Father's right hand of sovereignty. when I next see you on Salvington, we shall welcome your return to us as the supreme and unconditioned sovereign of this universe of your own making, serving, and completed understanding. In your stead, I now reign. I assume jurisdiction of all Nebadon as acting sovereign during the interim of your seventh and mortal bestowal on your ranch. And to you, Gabriel, I commit the safekeeping of the Son of Man about to be until he shall presently and in power and glory be returned to me as the Son of Man and the Son of God. And Gabriel, I am your sovereign until Michaelis returns. That to me is the essence of the whole bestowal. Show man what God is like. Show God what man could be like. And show all of us how we can meet and find each other. And do all of this very quickly in one short life. My Lord, he did it in 32 years.
Yeah, and the average person is mature for 32.
He did it in 32 years. He was finished. The whole public career was a postscript. The stole was finished.
The liberals, and then they go to Trump and they change.
That's right.
When you eat, none of you digest. If you keep on eating, it's pretty bad. Well, when you want to join the witch party, as the last living witch, until first joined up with me, recruiting that party member.
That's
right. No other major party can make that claim. We find to stand four square on the principles of Clay and Webster. Bert, give him a form. And swear him in private.
Hi.
Hi, Dale.
Good to see you. That's a labor of love. When we get elected, we'll collect that city. Burke asked me last night to kick this thing off today by exploring the adjutant mind spirits of the universe. And with your permission, I'd like to do that. Is it agreeable now? Well, first of all, they're one of the supreme spirit group. They belong to the same group that starts off as the master spirit, circuit spirit, reflection spirit, creative spirit, adjutant mind spirit, reflective image age. Like the circuit spirits and the image age, the adjutant spirits are not personalities. If you'll notice, when you get into the beings of origin in the third sourcing center, or who are classified as spirits, you get into some gray areas about personality. This is not true with the sons. The sons are always personal, completely personal. The master spirits are apparently personal. The reflective spirits are personal, but non-contactable by creature personality. The creative spirit is in a class by herself. I have the belief that she is a becoming personality. The spirits of the Havona circuit are not personalities. They're impersonal spirits, although they give origin to personal tertiary supernovae. The reflective image aids are exactly like their ancestral reflective spirit, and they are images, not personalities. You can't deal with a reflective spirit, but those who have such business do deal with an image aid. And it's just, I guess it's like a closed circuit TV in three dimensions. What you see here is what's happening simultaneously in the reflective spirit, only you're not dealing with a reflective spirit, you're looking at a TV screen. Now just take your TV out of two dimensions and put it in three dimensions and you've got a picture of an image aid. These adjutant mind spirits are circuits rather than entities. They are pretty well encircuited in the local universe, but not so much so on the experimental planet. They have less to do with their functions elsewhere. They are described as levels of consciousness in the creative spirit of the local universe. Now, how can they be all over and be levels of the consciousness of a local universe mother spirit? Well, I think we should remember that the local universe mother spirit is also all over. There is no place in Nebadon where she is not. And when you come to the end of her presence, you have come to the outer border of the local universe of Nebadon. And when you leave her presence, you have left our local universe. So these adjutant mind spirits can be all over this local universe and still be within the local universe mother spirit. I think of these mind spirits as being a part of her universe space presence, a level of her consciousness, just like we have.
levels of human consciousness. We have perhaps a subconscious and we have perhaps a superconscious, part of our own mind. And that's not the soul. I think of them as being focused on the number one world of the life carriers in the near regions of Salvington. Just as much as you can have a focus in your nervous system below the level of your conscious, of your center of consciousness. Take, for example, at the upper part of the spinal cord. There's a gizmo there called the pons area, and it functions as a kind of a chief clerk running your body. And it's a sub-cerebral focalization of a whole lot of nervous network that comes up through the spinal column. And it performs many automatic functions. And you can teach it, I think, or you can at least teach the back of your brain to do things when you do them many, many times. Example, the first time you drive a car, you're all thumbs. And pretty soon, it gets easy. And it gets easy because you're not thinking about driving anymore. Because that whole thing is being taken over by the back of your brain, which is mechanically much more efficient than the front of the brain, but it can't learn directly. It has to be conditioned. But you repeat the act and repeat the act and repeat the act, and finally, this stupid chief clerk catches on. And when the chief clerk catches on, the chief clerk can move a lot faster than you can move. Yeah. Example, you're driving along 35 miles an hour, and a little child runs across in front of your car. Your reactions are instantaneous. And if you had to make a conscious decision to put on the brake, you'd probably kill the child. But you act so much faster than that. When this chief clerk is with it, the chief clerk is really with it. I think of the seven adjutant mind spirits being focalized on the first world of the life carrier. It's like this pons area in the consciousness, in the mentality of the creative spirit of the local universe, if you please. The first five adjutants register quantitatively and qualitatively. There, in other words, you've got all kinds of dials. And you can take a reading off of how they're working in any living creature if you want it. So the book says that means a lot of dials. How much of this adjutant is registering? For example, you can tell if you're a born Republican, you can tell right away that none of them are registering the Democrats, and so on. They're operating on the mechanical levels of non-teachable mind. The y'all don't take that seriously. The last two adjutants, you can determine if there is a qualitative registry, but not a quantitative registry. The last two adjutants, worship and wisdom, register directly in the creative spirit herself. And there's another interesting statement that only the personality aspects of mind repercuss in the Supreme Being. And I think that is one of the significances which should be attached to the statement, the act is ours, the consequence is God's. Remember in the illustrations of Maran Shimoda. Now, we have a hard time thinking about these adjutants, I believe, because as we think, we experience, and we probe within ourselves in terms of our own subjective experience with consciousness. And we can never get a pure analysis of adjutant function because our minds are not only seven adjutant minds, there are at least three spiritual influences within or impinging upon our minds. And what's more, our minds are personal minds. And the personality which we have colors our mind just as much as this tablecloth is colored green. So we can never feel the experience of mind except it be a personal mind. For example, let's take the fifth adjutant, which is the highest of subhuman adjutants, the spirit of counsel. This can mean one thing as we evaluate the spirit of counsel. This means sitting down and taking advice, getting together, discussing it, talking it over. But to a higher mammal, this is nothing more than the herd instinct. Do you see what a different value there is to the fifth adjutant? Whether this be the final adjutant or merely a component of human mind. What we call counsel is not what a horse would call counsel if he could talk. They just want to be together. The spirit of counsel is a far cry from the herd instinct. And yet, when the fifth adjutant functions as the final adjutant in mammalian mind, this is the herd instinct. When it functions as a mid-adjutant in human mind, it is the spirit of counsel. Similarly, the third adjutant, the spirit of courage. Now, the word courage implies bravery, and the word bravery implies the possibility of default. Is courage desirable? Says the Blue Book. But this is a strictly human concept involving moral choice. Moral courage is a far cry from animal pugnacity, which is simply a material survival technique, the will to fight in a corner. You see how different this is? These adjutants are described here in general terms as they apply to human mind and personality, regardless of spiritual influence. The presence of personality invests all of these adjutants with added significance and meaning, which would not attach to their function on mammalian levels. Even the seventh adjutant, when that adjutant functions, it modifies the significance of the first six, because the seventh adjutant's function is a totalizing function, a unifying function of the acts of the other six. You'll recall, when you deal with a complete five-adjutant mind, as in the case of the highest of the mammals, or a spornegia, you also have a totalizing function. A five-adjutant mind totalizes to a sixth value, which is the identity of the animal. And this is not the spirit of worship. This is merely a total of a five adjutant mind. Does anybody want the reference on that? Fine. I did my homework this morning. I'm loaded for bear. Burke threw a lot of questions at me yesterday, and I haven't read these papers in about 6 years, I guess. Here she be. Page 528, paragraph 4. Last sentence. 528, paragraph 4. The five-adjutant mind equivalates to a totality or sixth reality level. And it is this factor which persists as an experiential identity. Now, they are discussing not animals, they're discussing spornogs. And this is the identity which can experience reincarnation up on the system headquarters. And the spornegia are the only beings which experience reincarnation. When the material body of a spornegia wears out, the life carriers fabricate another body and they move the old spornegia into the new body. And I would assume from this statement that any of the higher mammals here on Earth could be reincarnated if there were any point to reincarnating them.
How about the mystic life?
They don't die.
They
they can just get a new body.
They get a new body. They get dematerialized, and I presume rematerialized. They're neither human nor divine.
No, they're
neither mortal nor immortal.
Between.
I think that's the origin of the term mid. Midsonites. I would infer from
this. I think it'd be fun to live for thousands of years in the same body or a new body and still be in the same environment.
Yeah.
And learn.
Well, you know, there's a theory expressed elsewhere in the papers that at the end of the present universe age, some of the local universe personnel think these Sparnagia may become more than animals. Now, if that's the case, let's say they become personal. And if God endowed them with personality, immediately two more adjutants would function. And they'd be people then. Consider the unique nature of such a being who has a pre-personal or sub-personal memory going back for eons and then experiences birth as a personality. This is a unique combination too.
They may not have memory.
I think this identity has something. I think the old Sparnog, when he moves into his new house, I think he knows all his old friends. I think he still wants to go to prayer meeting.
Well, the word experiential
identity, yes.
Yes.
I would think so.
I would infer that he would.
You've got the same, you've got something there, and you've got the same mind circuits operating.
Reality level. Sixth reality level.
Now, you have on your rancher, we had on your rancher, two, we had three setups of the seven adjutant mind spirits. You had their initial setup, then their second configuration, and then their third configuration. Now, the first one isn't described as such, but I think I can justify this statement by inference. I believe that the first configuration of the seven adjutant mind spirits was when